You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and as it's the season of goodwill to all men and all that, we've decided to make it Gay Comics Month on the show. So this week, and in the two episodes following, before we break for Yuletide revelry, I'm looking at gay comics and gay comic creators, starting off with the writer and artist of the new small press British comic Badger. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner, FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I'm talking to Howard Hardiman, the creator of Badger and Anthropomorphism in Action. Why does that make me laugh? Why does that make you laugh? It is a good title.
It's a bit of a mouthful, I think, isn't it? enough people come up to me at comic stores and they're like, you get this division of people who are either, people look at it and just go, What does that big word mean? I don't understand. Or other people just sort of see it and just giggle straight away. So I figure that's a fair division to be making among people.
Although, I mean, ironically, anthropomorphism is a very comics word. People have been using that as the posh title for funny animal comics. I just made the inverted commas sign for people listening to this on radio for years, because obviously it's when creatures take on the attributes of a human being. But I guess it's something that's only used in critical circles, and why a lot of people still are unfamiliar with it as a sort of regular word that you might use to describe comics.
Yeah, and I think I also probably don't quite follow my own rules when one of the things that I do is do these drawings of bronchioles. Mm. And I don't know if that counts as anthropomorphism if bronchioles are part of a person.
They have faces. Well, in your comic, not in. he stresses underlying my complete lack of knowledge of biology. But anyway, yes, I'll ask you a proper question.
Okay.
How long have you been doing comics, Howard?
How long have I been doing comics? Only really since the beginning of this year.
Wow.
What happened was a friend of mine had a stall at the UK Web Comics thing, and said that he was really nervous. I'd been doing some drawings on post-it notes that I'd been putting on the internet, and he went, that's a web comic, come along. So with about 2 weeks' notice, I had to make my first comic.
Wow.
And it went all right, so I kind of carried on.
I mean, the post-it note drawings you'd been putting on the net, were they just to amuse yourself, or because you had a desire to do some kind of, you know, artwork that addressed concerns of maybe being a cartoonist but maybe not a serialized comic creator?
I think it was a format that really worked for me at the time, because I was in a job I didn't enjoy, was the main thing. And what do you normally have around you when you're at work? You have post-it notes. So it, you know, a lot of those were like one-shot gags, quite observational, usually things that I'd overheard or would then just twist to make it worse, or for some reason quite often drawings of my mum, how she looked in the 80s carrying gin and making comments about drug overdoses and stuff. But it wasn't something that I planned out particularly ahead of time. They were all very much spontaneous kind of jokes and things that I had to put down. But yeah, there was this sort of drive to be making stuff because I'd been doing the wrong job for so long, I think, after, you know, graduated from art school about 10 years ago,
right,
and spent far too long just trying to explore the wrong kinds of things, and had been doing some photography and having exhibitions of that, had been doing some writing, a little bit of journalism, and I don't know why it took me so long when I've spent so long reading comics to go, hang on, pictures and words, picture. Why not do comics? Although now I do comics with pictures without words, but well. Oh well.
So you had been a comic fan for a while then, before you started doing them?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was young, the most exciting day that I can remember was when I won an art competition in Transformers magazine.
Fantastic.
It was very embarrassing.
You know, I'm going to dig out that issue now.
Oh, God. That's going to be quite frightening. I think it involved lots of stickers. It had something to do with bicycles. Okay. I can't quite remember. But I won this art chest. that then sat on a shelf for a very long time. But no, I think, you know, they, when I think I sort of hit Sandman the same time as everyone else did, and steered clear of a lot of the superhero stuff. But I think, like a lot of people, you kind of dip in and out of that, and you know, sometimes you go, oh yes, I'll follow this religiously for a year, and then by the time a year's passed, you're going, hang on, I've read the same story five times and nothing's changed and nothing's happened, and everything that was exciting's been undone. So I was quite pleased when I started to discover a lot more of the, you know, I hate to use the word, sort of graphic novel kind of comics, where it's something that's actually much, you know, driven by a much tighter kind of story and a, you know, that you get characters who actually stay upset when something bad happens rather than everything's miraculously all right again.
Looking at the kind of characters you draw in Badger, that's as much also coming from a children's illustration background as, say, regular comics, because you don't actually see that many comics like Badger. I mean, there's a sort of ongoing debate about what comics are suitable for children, because there's, you know, the belief that children love comics, so therefore why aren't there comics for children, you know, and why aren't there comics for children, Howard?
Because it's easier to make us part with their money once we've grown up, perhaps. I'm not sure. I think when I was making Badger, I didn't really... Because a lot of it was... You know, it started as a post-it note thing as well. And it was connecting to sort of some events that had been happening in my life. And I wanted to write a really sad story. And the first few times I tried to start it with human characters in, it just felt really emo. And then it was just, suddenly I went, oh, hang on, and started drawing, and, you know, Badger emerged from all of that. So it wasn't like I'd planned out a story that would be, you know, aimed at kids or anything like that. And I think that, you know, I've talked to people whose kids have read it and said that they really enjoyed it. And I think it's interesting how kids draw something very different from the story. And also that there's been some people who've been going, hang on, but there's actually quite a violent scene in it. You know, is this all right for kids? But it's funny how little the kids who've read it have actually sort of gone, oh my God, that's terrifying, it's violence. They've just sort of gone, oh, you know, someone's bullying him or something like that's happening. So it's not like they don't understand it, but they don't draw the same degree of threat that I think an adult reader does.
Well, and also there is this incredible misconception about what is and what isn't suitable for children. Obviously things that aren't suitable for children are the sort of things that, say, guarantee a movie a 15 certificate, you know, bad language, swearing, sex, explicit violence. But in terms of what is suitable, you know, for a child-friendly audience, loads of things that are considered children's classics are very dark and very violent, you know, going back to Brothers Grimm and all sorts of things that, you know, you and I probably watched as kids. But back then, presumably, there was a similar debate, you know, but we weren't aware of it as kids, what was suitable for us. But now when you listen to all these facile arguments, oh, that's a little bit, you know, dangerous, a little bit scary, kids shouldn't be allowed to see it just seems absolute nonsense, you know. Otherwise, how are they going to have any kind of experience of the world?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think as well, one of the advantages that comics have with that is that, you know, because pictures are, you know, you can read a picture in a lot of different ways than if it was just a, you know, just a written story, where I think if you've got a written story, people will come away and say the story was this. But if you've got pictures, then there's a lot more interpretation involved. And I think as well, there's a risk of underplaying the sophistication that kids can have when they read things like comics, because they're also really exposed to visual media in, you know, in everything that they see, and aren't quite so tainted by some sense of, you know, literature must be like this or like that. And I think it's really nice how quickly kids seem to take to comics as a medium. But, you know, as I say, I didn't set out to make a kid's comic, and I don't actually think I made a kid's comic at all. But kids tend to look at Badger and go, oh, he's cute. Whereas a lot of the adult readers who have read it have just gone, oh God, I've had days like that where I've just sat in my flat and just stared at the wall and nothing's happened at all. Or that, you know, you're just thinking, is the phone ever going to ring? And it never does. And so I think, you know, people attach their own experiences to the character a lot more.
But I suppose what I was getting at was that it has a crossover audience, that it is suitable for children, but also it has, you know, adult readers. And I think that that's something that's surprisingly rare. But Anthropomorphism in Action came first, presumably.
Yes.
And were there badger strips in the various issues of Anthropomorphism that then made it into the collected Badger edition? Or is that an entirely separate kind of graphic novella, to use a word that made us both cringe?
Badger sort of sprang complete, you know, and the story just sort of evolved very separately to all the sort of quick and dirty jokes that I've been telling on the post-it notes that I'd been blogging for a while. And, you know, I started doing these little sketches of Badger sat in my old flat and just moping around and it all being very grey and all that. And, you know, I'd been posting those serialized on the net as well and was really surprised and really pleased when he got a bit of a following and, you know, when then slightly put out when he had more friends on Facebook than I did. But they developed as separate strands, and it's only really recently that I've been kind of continuing Badger's story in among all the other stuff that I've done.
And as a new comics creator, obviously an experience you've had this year is attending conventions and trying to find your fan base and finding out that world sort of actually at the deep end. I mean, what's that been like?
It's been really good, actually, on balance. I paused a little bit there because, you know, there have been a couple of events that I've gone to where I've just gone, oh, actually, no, it's just full of superhero fanboys and, you know, all of the people who make like small press comics have all just sort of been sat in a corner going, oh no, no one likes us here. But those events have actually in their own way been really good for meeting other creators because, you know, they're all sat around with nothing to do while everyone else is picking up back issues. But I've been really pleased with having been able to go out to all of these events and meet other people in the same boat, because I think a lot of, you know, it sounds like a lot of us got into it just sort of sat by ourselves and not really aware of how other people are doing it. And it, you know, it's just really nice being able to see people pick up something that you made and seeing them respond to it there and then, rather than having to just kind of put things out there on the internet or, you know, just vaguely hope that someone somewhere will like what you do. So I've really enjoyed going out to all the different comics fairs that I've been to and plan on carrying on with lots of that, but, you know, maybe not making quite so many long treks outside of London next year.
And in a way, actually, I think you've timed it really well, because over the last year or so there seems to have been a real resurgence in British comic book creators that I think British comics for years just coasted along. People would send stories to 2000 AD and expect to get headhunted by the Americans, but as that sort of tailed off, there has been a real interest in homegrown comics, and so small press comics have been doing quite well this year. And now there's the DFC, which is this new comic published by Random House, and now Jonathan Cape publishing new British graphic novels by new creators. So I think it's great that there is this new focus on British creators. I mean, have you felt any of that kind of like perhaps help your reception at all?
I think so. I mean, going out to events like Leeds and Bristol and actually seeing, you know, people who are like the next step along from where I am now has been really useful. And I think I've never had an interest in, you know, writing off to 2000 AD and being headhunted by Marvel, not least because, you know, the pound against dollar means that it's not worth doing anyway.
Actually, that might be something, you know, that's also affected all this, you know.
I've overheard people going, oh, this is rubbish, I'm not doing anything for Marvel, I get paid more at Tesco's or something like that now. But that's not, you know, I'm not in it to try and, you know, make a huge amount of money or anything like that. I'm in it because I want to tell stories. And, you know, the creators who, you know, I get really excited about are people like Simone Lear, where it's quirky and it's fun and it's, you know, there's a complexity to it that you rarely find in mainstream comics. Although, you know, you do find it there. But I just like things that are cute. And there's not that many mainstream comics where, you know, you get something that's surreal or cute that way. So I'm not, you know, I'm not drawn towards that side of the industry at all. But I'm, you know, I'm really pleased that there is support for people making the kind of work that I'm making. Because otherwise I probably couldn't carry on.
Well, it's a shame actually that there isn't a middle ground term, because funny animal comics sounds derogatory and anthropomorphic comics sounds like you should have a PhD in the subject. But whatever it is that you do, it seems that there aren't enough comics that perhaps use an avatar like a badger to tell stories that maybe wouldn't be as interesting if you used normal human characters, because there are so many stories told that way. When it came to telling the story in the main Badger comic, was that vaguely autobiographical? Because obviously, I mean, there are scenes that are drawn from the local area that we both live in, so that's obviously been a slight effect.
Yeah.
But in general, I mean, what was the impetus of telling Badger's specific story in that volume?
Because of the way that I approached making it, it wasn't until I was about a third of the way through that I actually realised that that's what I was making. there wasn't this sort of sense of, you know, I have to tell the story of this time when... And besides which, you know, there's not a very strong narrative in his book. It's much more this sort of sequence of little snapshots of his life where it's just very melancholy and he's just sort of moping around, and you know, luckily that side of it's not that autobiographical, although you know, you have your days. But it was really important for me to connect with a really strong sense of location for it, so you know, that's why you can recognize the shops that he buys his sandwiches from and everything else, and you know, if you're very forgiving with my artwork, you can recognize some of the people. But no, coming back to what you're saying about using anthropomorphic characters, I think what it's done is it's opened it out to a different audience. Because I noticed the first comic convention that I went to, I was really surprised when pretty much everyone who bought things from me was a woman. And I was like, oh, I didn't realise that I was making comics for women. But because I hadn't really thought about who I was making comics for, because I'd just been making comics for myself. And it's interesting because it seems as though there aren't that many...
Crossover.
I know, and it sounds really either patronising or, you know, mean to say, oh, yes, I'm really glad that girls like my comic. Because that wasn't, you know, it was never... You know, it was never my sort of, you know, I'll have a scheme, I'll put a cute little animal in it and then everyone will buy my comic. But it's interesting that the demographic for these sorts of books seems to have a wider reach than stuff where it's, you know, muscle bound superheroes and women with unfeasible breasts, that sort of thing.
Although I'm pigeonholing you a bit by broadcasting my interview with you as part of Gay Comics Month on Strip / nice. Panel Borders. If only because, you know, gay comics could mean comics by a gay creator or a comic by even a straight creator that has gay characters in it. And it does seem that the gay voice in comics is very subdued. And yet, at the same time, something like superhero comics seems inherently homoerotic. But I guess that's just, you know, the creature in the corner that no one wants to talk about, you know? But, you know, you said that Badger isn't particularly autobiographical. But, you know, in terms of loneliness and whatever, I mean, you know, does the gay experience at all, you know, speak into that? Or is it not something you even consider at all?
I don't think it really... You know, I'm very lucky on that front that I've never had any real trouble because of my sexuality. I've never been, you know, marginalised or isolated. Perhaps it's because I'm tall and people know that I could thump them really hard if they... but no, I've never had an experience that's kind of made me go, oh, hang on, being gay makes me very lonely and sad. I think, you know, being a badger living in a flat would probably make you very lonely and sad instead. So I don't think it feeds directly into the work I produce. But inevitably you're putting a lot of yourself into the work that you make. So I guess. But I'm really pleased now to see that in lots of mainstream comics you are seeing a lot more gay characters. And also just, you know, lots more complicated setups, like in Runaways, where you've got, you know, essentially a lesbian relationship where one of them's possibly transgendered but shape-shifting, and it's you know, and I just like the way that it's treated as very normal.
And that actually seems to be something that's going on in the media in general, like something like Doctor Who and Torchwood these days, where it's not even an issue that you have gay and bisexual characters. You know, when you imagine 10 years ago, if you had a gay kiss in Doctor Who at 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, people would be storming the BBC with burning torches. You know, I think there does seem to be a sea change in culture that makes it, you know, a lot more acceptable, thank goodness.
But then I think maybe Doctor Who know who their target audience are. I mean, who was it brought it back, so...
Yes, but I don't think we can assume that 12 million gay people are watching Doctor Who every Saturday.
No, that's very true.
At the risk of massaging your ego too much, last week Grant interviewed Art Spiegelman, and I sat in on the interview, and he was talking about when he was doing Breakdowns, one of his very first comics, which has just been reprinted for its 30th anniversary. He was drawing panels on single square pieces of paper, probably about the size that you've printed Badger, because he didn't know exactly what to do with one of the stories, and then just sort of submitted them all to the publisher and said, you make a story out of it. And then is actually recognized now. His seminal work is something that uses anthropomorphic characters to tell, you know, an incredibly harrowing story. So it's interesting that the two of the themes of your work do seem to be something that crop up from time to time in underground comics. And it's weird that sort of inspirational use of certain techniques doesn't seem to have turned up in mainstream comics. Do you think that it's a lack of dialogue perhaps between mainstream comics and underground comics, or coming to it from maybe an art school background rather than, you know, wanting to be a comic creator background?
Yeah, I think it would be really difficult for a mainstream comic to suddenly take a risk around how it formats the comic itself. The thing of sticking everything in squares isn't anything new. I mean, I really like the comics by Jason, is he Norwegian? I think. But, you know, I really like the way that using a fixed size square changes the way you have to draw. And I think while I was still, because I think with Badger, I was still very much learning how to draw a story, you know, and I'd like to think that I've, you know, learned a lot from doing that. But having that formal constraint of saying, you know, I have to be able to tell a story, but I'm only ever allowed the size of a post-it note to do that with, was a really interesting experience. But I don't think you could ever manage to do, you know, like pow blam superhero fights that small, because you have to reduce everything down to quite a simple style when you've got, I think as well, it slows down the narrative having everything just sort of the same size. It paces it differently to, I think, if you've got these big splash pages.
Well, I'm in half a mind to argue with you and say, you know, there were some great superhero comics that just have like 9 panel grids on every page, but life's too short, we've only got about 5 minutes left. But no, I agree with you absolutely that as an artist or a writer, whatever, the most terrifying thing is the blank page. And if you've got at the very least one constraint, even if it's just a page size or something, then in a way that's somehow more liberating, because you've got something to hang your hook on, and then a starting point that you can base your work on. With that square post-it note format before you started you know, using other formats, you do still have a great variety of different art styles. I mean, the different strips and anthropomorphism and action. I just like tripping that off the tongue. You know, show that, you know, you've got different styles as an artist. You use different pen techniques.
Yeah.
Do you find that with the different kind of stories you're telling, you know, whether it's a gag strip or an ongoing narrative, it dictates a different kind of pens you use, a different kind of brushstroke and so on?
Yeah, I mean, now I draw Badger on sort of about 10-inch square and always use like heavy watercolor paper, use brush pens, and everything in his world has to be slightly soft focus and slightly subdued, because that's how he lives and it's how he sees the world around him, and everything's in this sort of really gray tone. But for things like the story of Jack the Naughty Squirrel, it has to be really, his life is so frantic and so violent that it would look really weird if his story was told in really nice soft tones, where it's just like, oh, look, you know, he's just killed this man in the park. You know, that wouldn't work. It has to be a bit more, I don't want to say sort of naturalistic, because, you know, I try to draw properly for it, but I don't know if I succeed. But I think that the content really informs the style that you have to tell the story in. And you know, I'm not exactly at a point where, you know, I've got huge fully evolved stories that I can just write down a script and go, there you go, someone else can make it. So I've got to kind of be a little bit supple in how I approach it, I think.
And on the other end of the scale, in terms of marketing your comic, you've been creating cuddly little collectible knitted badges.
Crocheted, sorry. Yes.
I'm not an expert in this field.
Yarn-based craft.
Now, there's a phrase I can add to my repertoire. How did those come about?
I think because everyone had been saying, oh, Badger's really, really cute. You want to just take him home and, oh, you want to look after him. I had a go at making one myself, and I can crochet, but I got about as far as his shoulders and then got stuck because I couldn't remember how you do corners in socks, which I can do when I knit, but I can't do when I'm crocheting. So I had to kind of grab my friend and just go, what do I do now? And he just was like, oh, give me the hook here, and made this first little badger toy. He was all quite awkward and gangly, but we both just sort of fell in love with the little toy. And so, you know, he's been sat at home on his own making lots and lots of little badger toys, which is very cute. And so, yeah, I think it's nice to, you know, be able to go, look, here's a book, and then you can give him a little hug because he needs one.
Less huggable is your gallery show, which starts on Monday.
Yes.
So that would have been 3 days ago. It's at the Greenwich Picture House, and it's on now because this is next Thursday.
Yes, it's going brilliantly well, and I have no idea what it's going to look like.
What sort of things in terms of format, in terms of number of pictures, are going to be up there? Or are you deciding it as we talk?
I'm deciding it as we talk, but fantastic. I'm going to be showing some of the drawings that I've been doing for Badger at Christmas, which are the ones that have gone into the latest anthropomorphism in action.
Available from all good retailers now for £3.
There can't be many good retailers then, can there?
Not.
But yeah, no, I'm really pleased to be able to exhibit my work because I've been doing that as a photographer before, and it's nice to kind of bring it round full circle to actually be taking a character who'd been on tiny little post-it notes and actually be, you know, showing him to a different audience, because I would imagine that there's going to be a lot more people in and out of the cinema than there might be, you know, accidentally clicking on cutebutsad.co.uk. So it's a quite nice way to actually bring him to new people.
I mean, I didn't even know that the Greenwich Picture House had a gallery space. I mean, had you approached various different venues, or was it just a sort of chain of coincidences that led you there?
Oh, it's a chain of coincidences. I have no business planning skills whatsoever. they've got two spaces. One's this basement area, and then they've got their bar. And in each of those spaces, they've got a little bit of area, a little bit of wall space. And, you know, I was just in there watching a film and had, you know, and knew the guy who ran the bar and said to him, how do you get your art? And he went, why, do you want to show something? And I was like, hell yeah, why not? In that way that I have of just saying yes to things without having any idea about whether or not I can actually do it. So that's kind of how it ended up happening.
Excellent. And it's on for a month, and you'll be able to buy your comics in the cinema?
I haven't spoken to them about that yet. So I don't know yet whether or not they've been doing that for the last 3 days.
Fingers crossed. Well, at the very least, you'll be able to go to the Greenwich Picture House now and see your work and buy it from cutebutsad.co.uk. Is there some kind of PayPal-y thing that people can use to buy your comics from your website?
Yes.
Good.
There is.
And so there's 4 issues of Anthropomorphism in Action.
Yes.
And a badger so far. And you can buy the knitted toys too?
Yes, you can. We've already sold out of the third volume of Anthropomorphism in Action. So if you want to know what happened to Badger in autumn, you're going to have to wait till I bring out another book.
In case the plugging wasn't explicit enough, you can find info on Howard's comics and his current exhibition at the Greenwich Picture House at www.cutebutsad.co.uk, and you can hear our interview again at 11:30 p.m. on Sunday night and online at www.panelborders.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening.